White Network presents the International Jew Study Hour. Reading and commentary on Henry Ford's great classic about Jewish power in America.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and students of the International Jew. This is episode 38 tonight, and it's March 14th, 2013. I'm Carolyn Yeager, and
I'm Hadding Scott.
And we are here to bring you another exciting episode. Now, you know, Hadding, I'm always reminded how fast time is going by when I give the date at the beginning of a program, and now it's the middle of March already. And I have to get on that hateful income tax return soon, which is always something hateful that we have to be dealing with, which reminded me that we're going to be talking about plenty of hateful things tonight. At least that's how they appear to me. And this is, and I think that, what have I got here? That it got that way. I wrote something down for myself to say, but I can't think of it. Anyway, I think the International Jew has shown us just how it got that way. Yeah, just it got that how we got into such a mess that we're in today. I think the International Jew is doing a very good job of detailing that, and we're not even halfway through yet. Don't you?
In some ways.
Yeah. Okay. You always moderate it. You never as well 100% as I am. All right. Well, we'll start off, listeners, with completing chapter 33 from last week, and then we'll do chapter 34, and should probably be able to finish it, I hope.
Yeah.
Ready, Hattie?
And they deal with pretty much the same thing.
Yes.
Okay, so it was talking about the New York Kehillah and the fact that it consists of Jews from all walks of Jewish life.
Yeah, that was a great paragraph. That last one you read last week, and I'd almost ask you to read it again, but I don't want to take up too much time.
All right.
Wasted time.
And these are banded together for the purpose of protecting Jewish rights. From what? If Americans were not large in their liberal mindedness, the very statement of purpose would be an offense. Who in this country is interfering with anyone's rights? The American wants to know, for that is the kind of thing he wants to put down, and always has put down, and will put down again, wherever or from whatever quarter it arises. Therefore, it will occur to him, sooner or later, to demand particulars of these rights that need protection, and from what they need to be protected. What rights have Americans that Jews in America do not possess? Against whom are the Jews organized? And against what? What basis is there for the cry of persecution? None whatever, except the Jews' own consciousness that the course they are pursuing is due for a check. The Jews always know that. They are not in the stream of the world, and every little while, the world finds out what Judah has always known, always knows. Rabbi Elias L. Solomon has been quoted as saying, "There is no thinking Jew outside of America whose eyes are not turned toward this country. The freedom enjoyed by the Jews in America is not the outcome of emancipation purchased at the cost of national suicide, but the natural product of American civilization." Of course. Then where is the protection needed? What are the rights which the Kehillahs of this country are organized to defend? What are the meanings of these committees in every city and town of the land, spying upon American activities and bringing protests to bear to keep those activities within well-defined channels acceptable to the Jews? These questions have never been answered by the Jewish spokesmen. Let them prepare a Bill of Rights as they conceive their rights to be. Let them name every right they desire and claim. They have never done so. Why? Because the rights they dare name in public are such as they already possess in abundance. And further, because the rights that in their hearts they most desire are such that they cannot state to the American public.
Yeah, there you go. It's the same tactic they use in everything. You know, they pretend something, and the truth they won't tell, and they cover it up. But they want people to believe that in what they're, you know, that they are missing their rights, like in this case. But they dare not name it, and they bring this up a couple of times. It's really important to realize that they never really name. It's just like I was talking about in my latest Elie Wiesel blog I just posted, that, you know, they won't. As we know, you know, they won't talk about the details of what they're claiming, crying about. Yeah,
the devil is in the details. And when you ask people to say exactly what they mean in detail, that's when you find out what they're really up to.
Yeah, they disappear.
A Jewish Bill of Rights, such as could be published, would be met by the American people thus: why, you have all these things already. What more do you want? And that is the question which lies at the core of the entire Jewish problem. What more do they want? A further penetration of Kehillah activities may help to answer that question.
Okay, so that's the end of that chapter. And we're moving right into chapter 34, listeners.
Yeah.
And for a little bit later on, I got a bunch of information here about Lewis Marshall, and somewhere along the line, I'll bring it up.
Okay, chapter 34. The Jewish demand for rights in America. During the 12 years of its existence, the New York Kehillah has grown in power and influence until today. It includes practically the entire Jewish population in its operations. Among its direct or affiliated leaders and supporters are the owners of powerful newspapers, officials in the state, federal, and city administration, influential office holders on public boards, such as the Department of Health, the Board of Education, and the Police Department, members of the judiciary, financiers and heads of banking houses, mercantile, and manufacturing establishments, many of which exert a controlling influence in certain industries and financial combinations. But the New York Kehillah is more than a local organization. It is the pattern and parent Jewish community in the United States, the visible entourage of the Jewish government, the dynamo which motivates those protests and mass meetings which are frequently heralded throughout the country. And you can think of the civil rights movement as an example of that. And the arsenal of that kind of dark power which the Jewish leaders know so well how to use. Incidentally, it is also the whispering gallery where the famous whispering drives are originated and set in motion and made to break in lying publicity over the country.
Well, I like that. That sounds like the way I talk. Now, they're actually saying that they're breaking lying publicity all over the country.
Huh. Yeah.
Strong.
The people of the United States have a deeper interest than they realize in the New York Kehillah. The liaison between this center of Jewish power and the affairs of the people of the United States is made by the American Jewish Committee. The committee and the Kehillah are practically identical as far as the National Jewish Program is concerned. It may be added that through their foreign associations, they are also identical as far as the world program is concerned.
Well, you know, I was looking up some stuff, and I stuck this in here. Here's something I found, that the American Jewish Committee today does not meet the standards of the Better Business Bureau in three areas. I came upon the Better Business Bureau, I guess it from the wiki page on the American Jewish Committee. Board oversight, effectiveness policy, and effectiveness report. And then, you know, they also describe themselves today as Global Jewish Advocacy, the American Jewish Committee, even though it's still called American. You know, they've got centers all over the world, and they just have their headquarters and main office in New York City.
The United States is divided into 12 parts by the American Jewish Committee. The remark that this division is after the 12 tribes of Israel may be disregarded. Suffice it to say that every state belongs to a district, and that district number 12 includes New York, and that the district committee of district number 12 is chosen by the New York Kehila, and is by weight of wealth, authority, and continuous effort in behalf of Judah, justly recognized as the center of Jewish power in America, and it may be in the world also. This committee, some of the names of whose members are impressive, represents the focusing point of the religious, racial, financial, and political will of Jewry. This committee, it should be remembered, is also the executive committee of the New York Kehila. New York Jewry is the dynamo of the national Jewish machinery. Its national instrument is the American Jewish Committee.
Well, you see how they've got two committees that are apparently on two different organizations that are at the top, and they're both the same committee. I mean, the same people. They're exactly the same. I thought that's just the tricky way they do things.
You mean the American Jewish Committee and the Kehila?
Yeah.
Well, the Kehila is the New York City Kehila.
Yeah, but they form, but the New York City is the headquarters for the American Jewish Committee. Maybe this isn't where they say that, but I don't think it's anywhere else. And then they say that the head of the Kehila is the committee of the 12th district, and then that is also the executive committee of the Kehila, and it's also the top committee in that runs the American Jewish Committee. It's District 12, and I don't want to waste time here, but the District Committee of District 12 is chosen by the New York Kehila, and that is what runs that's what runs the American Jewish Committee, because it's the New York one. And then the same group of people is the executive committee of the Kehila. So it's the same people running the Kehila and running the American Jewish Committee at the very top. And that's why they say that, what do they say? They said that, that all the direction for United States Jewry all over the country comes from New York.
Yeah. Well, that's de facto.
Right.
There are certain announced purposes of these associations, and there are certain purposes which are not announced. The announced purposes may be read in printed pages. The purposes not announced may be read in the records of attempted acts and achieved results. To keep the record straight, let us look first at the announced purposes of the American Jewish Committee, then of the Kehila. Next at the line which binds the two together. And then at the real purposes as they are to be construed from a long list of attempts and achievements. The American Jewish Committee, organized in 1906, announced itself as incorporated for the following purposes. 1. To prevent the infraction of the civil and religious rights of the Jews in any part of the world. 2. To render all lawful assistance and to take appropriate remedial action in event of threatened or actual invasion or restriction of such rights, or of unfavorable discrimination with respect thereto. 3. To secure for the Jews equality of economic, social, and educational opportunities. 4. To alleviate the consequences of persecution wherever they may occur, and to afford relief from calamities affecting Jews.
And notice it's all about Jews,
yeah.
And it's not about other people like they try to pretend. They're protecting all minorities, but really, they only, you know, they don't. I mean, they don't even have it in their wording.
Well, they try to form coalitions with other minorities to the extent that it's helpful for them.
Mm-hmm.
It will thus be seen to be an exclusively Jewish program. There is nothing reprehensible about it. If it meant only what it said, and was observed only as to its ostensible purpose, it would be not only unobjectionable, but commendable. The charter of the Kehillah empowers it, among other things, to establish an educational bureau, to adjust differences between Jewish residents or organizations by arbitration or by means of boards of mediation or conciliation, while the Constitution announces the purpose to be, quote, to further the cause of Judaism in New York City and to represent the Jews in the city with respect to all local matters of Jewish interest. Where the American Jewish Committee and the Kehillah join forces is shown as follows. Furthermore, inasmuch as the American Jewish Committee was a national organization, the Jewish community, Kehillah, of New York City, if combined with it, would have a voice in the shaping of the policy of Jewry throughout the land.
Well, and it did. That's why they say it was. It was the two organizations were the same people. So the Kehillah was shaping policy throughout the land from New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. This is a continuing quote here, isn't it? Let's see. I don't see where the quotation mark closed.
No, I don't either. Yeah. Well, okay. Let's just, this is the American Committee and the Kehillah, this is probably something that they had written down. This is some of their guidelines or something.
Okay, I see where it ends.
Okay.
Okay, this is... 1. It is expressly understood that the American Jewish Committee shall have exclusive jurisdiction over all questions of a national or international character affecting the Jews generally. 2. The membership of the American Jewish Committee is to be increased so that the 12th District shall have allotted to it 25 members. 3. These 25 members are to be elected by the Jewish community, Kehillah, of New York City. 4. These 25 men shall at the same time constitute the Executive Committee of the community, Kehillah.
Well, there it is, see? There they spell it out real clear.
It will be seen, therefore, that the Kehillah and the principal body of the American Jewish Committee are one. The capital of the United States in Jewish affairs is New York. Perhaps that may throw a sidelight on the desperate efforts which are being continually made to exalt New York as the spring and source of all the thoughts worthwhile today. New York, the Jewish capital of the United States, has also been sought to be made the financial center, the art center, the political center of the country. But its art is Aphrodite, Mecca, and Afgar.
What does that stand for?
You got trashy Jewish plays, I believe.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Very good.
Its politics are those of a Judaized Tammany. Tell it not to the American Jewish Committee, nor yet to the Kahila, but let all Americans know that most of the United States lies west of New York. The country has come to view that strip of eastern coast as a miasmatic place whence rises the fetid drivel of all that is subversive in public thought. It is the home of anti-American propaganda, of pro-Jewish hysteria, a mad confusion of mind that passes in some quarters as a picture of America. But America is west of the metropolis. New York is an unassimilated province on the outskirts of the nation. As 9/10 of all the Jews in the United States live in allegiance to organizations which look to the American Jewish Committee as their overlord, the influence of the New York Kahila on the nation is not hard to measure. In every town, large and small, even where the Jewish community consists of a few, 30 or 75 souls, there is a leading Jew, be he rabbi, merchant, or public office holder, who is in constant touch with headquarters. What is done in New Orleans or Los Angeles or Kansas City is known in New York with surprising dispatch.
Well, they thought that then, and, you know, nothing has changed. I mean, it all runs exactly the same way. You know, every city or town, it's true. You find where the Jews are, and the Jews are pretty influential in that place. And I think almost even in some of the smallest ones, not the real tiny, maybe, but it's just amazing. And then you think that they still that this is still all run from New York, like they said then?
New York is still the biggest Jewish city in the world.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's where all the major media are, except for some that's in Los Angeles, I think. You know, and,
right.
Turner Broadcasting System in Atlanta.
Well, that's why we've never been able to get away from this Judaization, because it's just set, it's like communist cells or something. You know, it's all over. And, it's having its influence. And I know that, you know, these Jews in ordinary small towns, they get on the school board. They get on the, you know, on the county commissioners or something. They get on the board that runs the fire department or the police department and so on. You know, they do that. And then they influence it's all run.
Incidentally, it would interest some clergymen to know that their names are listed among those who can be depended on to play the Jewish hand whenever required.
Clergyman.
Next Pope that we just got.
Yeah, well.
Very well liked by Jewish organizations.
But they always like everybody, though. I'm waiting to see if he's really so friendly to the Jews. We'll see. They always say that.
Now, the public statement of purpose on the part of these Jewish bodies has just been shown. It is seen that the protection of Jewish rights is the ostensible program, against which no one can say a word.
Perhaps now, this needs to be changed, you know. I mean, they're saying that, you know, and that's still true today. People talk about, well, Jews have a right to protect their rights and protect themselves and all, la, la. Nobody can say a word against that. Well, we better change that and start saying a word against that. Because they're coddled, and their rights end up being more important than anybody else's.
Yeah, they're under more intense criticism than they have been in a long time since September 11th. And the growth of the internet has helped that a lot.
Yeah, it's hard to say then. Probably more people at that time were like, well, the Jews are just people, just like us. And they were, you know, people were probably totally unaware back in 1920. Although in a lot of ways, I mean, an awful lot of people were anti-Jewish. They just instinctively were. They just had, it just had been coming down through their families for years. And they weren't so tied into media as we are today and being brainwashed like that. So even, you know, I would say, I mean, people in my family were. But they didn't talk about it much. But if it came up, they were, you know. They didn't trust the Jews. They didn't like the Jews. Of course, they were Catholics. But, you know.
Perhaps the term Jewish rights is unfortunately chosen. If Jewish rights coincide with American rights, then more than the Jews are protecting them. The whole American nation is engaged in that work. But it is not true that Jewish rights are the same as American rights. Unfortunately, the Jews have adopted an attitude which could only have sprung from the belief that it is a Jewish right to Judaize the United States.
I like that.
This is one of the dangerous doctrines being preached today, and most assiduously by Jews and those who have been influenced by Jewish thought, namely, that the United States is not any definite thing as yet, but that it is yet to be made, and it is still the prey of whatever power can seize it and mold it to its liking. It is a favorite Jewish view that the United States is a great unshapen mass of potentiality, of no particular character which is yet to be given its definite form. It is in the light of this view that Jewish activity must be interpreted. That doctrine with which so large a mass of Americans are inoculated is making havoc with the whole Americanization program today. It is broadening America out of all semblance to its distinctive self and blurring those determining ideals and ideas on which American institutions are based. The attempt first to give the people to understand that the United States is nothing particular as yet, and second, to make it something different spiritually from what it has always been, is peculiarly agreeable to the philosophy which sways the internationally minded Hebrew. We're not making Americans. We are permitting foreigners to be educated in the theory that America is a free-for-all, the prize of whatever fantastic foreign political theory may seize it.
That kind of makes me think of libertarianism. Today's libertarianism that, you know, well, everybody has their own idea, everybody has their own freedom and everything, and we don't have, it makes for kind of a free-for-all. There's nothing that really ties us all together except this idea of freedom.
Yeah. Libertarianism is a retreat into abstraction. People that used to be, in favor of the white majority, they've retreated into libertarianism because that's an ideology that's acceptable to the Jews, pretty much.
That's right. It's acceptable. This need to be acceptable is just it's gotta end. People have got to give it up. The people who can give it up, the people who are capable and strong enough and clear enough in their head to give it up, need to give it up and quit going along with it.
There you have the secret of the great refusal of the foreign population to change themselves into conformity with America. Why should they, when they are taught that America may be changed into conformity with them? It is time to limit our broad-mindedness until it will fit within the limits of the Constitution and the traditions which have made America what it is, the desired haven, even in preference to Palestine, of the Jews and every other race.
All the Jews. And so what's good about that? Yeah. So, you know, naturally, because we have this all this freedom here, which is nice if it's just white folks, but it makes all these other people come here, and particularly the Jews, just loved it, and they still love it.
Yeah, I think that paragraph there slightly undermines the overall argument, which is that America already had a character that's worth preserving. And then you're going to go ahead and say, you know, yes, we are the refuge for the rest of the world's wretched refuse.
Well, I think that's what they're arguing, isn't it? That they say that, you know, I know that Ford thought that America has an identity. It's Anglo-Saxon. It was Anglo-Saxon. And, you know, and then they all come along later, all this immigration, and say, well, it's not determined yet. Well, if you let a lot of different people in, that's what's going to happen.
Well, I mean, this is especially incongruous after the First World War, given that during the First World War, the United States had started suppressing ethnic identities that were other than English-speaking American. The French people in Louisiana were no longer allowed to use French in their schools. And there were many German speakers throughout the Midwest, and even German-English bilingual schools. Mm-hmm. And they had to stop that. So the Jews, they still wanted to defy that conformity.
Yeah. And they said, as we'll see, they thought that they were immune to these laws that they made wanted for other people. Okay.
So then, what is this conception of Jewish rights, which the Kehillah and the American Jewish Committee are organized to defend? It is only by deductions from the acts of these bodies that the answer can be formulated. In the Jewish records for the year 5668, which is 1907 to 1908 for Christians, we read, quote, "Perhaps the most noticeable feature of the year in America has been the demand in certain quarters for the complete secularization of public institutions in the country. What may be deemed the demand of the Jews for their full constitutional rights."
Yeah, that's just great, isn't it? We've got to completely secularize all public institutions because the Jews demand it. Otherwise, they're not having their constitutional rights. It doesn't even make sense.
Well, you know, under the 14th Amendment, they have an argument.
Well, let's not go into that. We won't finish.
Let the reader notice that the only time he finds the religious note struck in this series of studies of international Jewish activity, it is struck by the Jews. Honest non-Jews have been nonplussed by the Jewish charge that any scrutiny of Jewish action is religious persecution, even when religion has never been thought of or mentioned. The explanation is not far to seek. In the above quotation, the religious note is struck at once. The full constitutional rights of Jews demands that we effect the complete secularization of the public institutions of the country. That is worth thinking of, but to continue the quotation, Justice Brewer's article asserting that this is a Christian country has been challenged more than once, and the idea was formally combated in papers by Dr. Herbert Friedenwald of New York, Isaac Hassler of Philadelphia, and Rabbi Ephraim Frisch of Little Rock, Arkansas. The legal and theoretical argument was supplemented in a practical way by widespread opposition to Bible readings and Christmas carols in public schools, an opposition specifically decided upon by the Central Conference of American Rabbis. In New York, The agitation against the Carrolls produced a counter-demonstration in their favor, and the matter seems to have been left to the discretion of the individual teacher. In Philadelphia, Cincinnati, St. Paul, and maybe elsewhere, there were similar movements and counter-movements, and the question may yet return to plague us.
Now, I don't think this was written by a Jew. This was simply written. You know, they have some of these things here that might have been written by them. But anyway.
It says Jewish records for the year.
Yeah, it's in
1907, 1908.
It's in the Jewish records.
So this is a Jewish publication.
Okay, so they say that all these counter movements may yet return to plague us, because they come up with their demonstration, and then there turned out to be counter demonstrations, thank goodness, of the Christians when they said they had to stop Christmas carols and stuff. That's just totally, you know, was outrageous. So they didn't stand for that. So they didn't always win back in those days, but you know, Vince, they keep going at it, and now they have.
Yeah. There you have an officially authorized Jewish statement, what the Jews conceived to be a part of their Jewish rights. A careful examination of the intensive propaganda conducted by the Kehillah and the American Jewish Committee will not only reveal that the whole United States is considered to be the legitimate field for Jewish interference, but also that a very wide diversity of rights is insisted upon by them. In dozens of states and hundreds of towns and cities, this program has been plied, but always with too little publicity to apprise the people what is going on. In any number of cases, the Jews win their contentions because of the local pressure they are able to produce, usually by their very forehanded way of selecting and obligating public officials. In other instances, they have lost, but every loss they credit to a beginning of their educational campaign. A loss enables them to teach a lesson to somebody by means of a boycott or a changed attitude on the part of the local bank, or in some other way equally effective in creating the fear of the Jews, which of course is from the John Gospel.
Yeah. And they've got that right. You know, they've got that right. They obligate certain public officials that they realize have a weakness in some way, to then go along with them when the time comes and so on.
The Jews have evidently convinced themselves that the Constitution of the United States entitles them to change the character of many of the time-honored practices obtaining here. And if this is true, American citizens should take cognizance of these things and prepare to adjust themselves to further changes. If they do not take kindly to further changes at the behest of Jewry, they owe it to themselves to know what the Jewish program is, that they may meet it with a higher type of weapon than that to which the Jew naturally resorts.
Now, here again, I just have to interject. This is one of the big mistakes. They were still trying to be, you know, a higher type of person and not behave the way the Jews did, you know, but look where it's got us. So I think we need to quit this idea saying, well, we wouldn't want to behave like that. Well, we wouldn't want to be like them, but there's a lot of things that we should do. We should be far, far more tougher and, what you might say, ruthless and so on in dealing with these people.
It is intended in this and the following article to indicate, by the actual program, what the real objective of Jewry is in the United States. When you collect and summarize all the demands that have been made by the New York Kehillah alone, you gain an idea of what is afoot. A few of these demands are referred to now, subject to further investigation in another article.
Illustration.
Further illustration in another article. One, the unrestricted admission of Jewish immigration into this country from any part of the world. Heads of Kahila labor unions in New York demand that the Jews in Europe be exempted from the operation of whatever American immigration law may be passed. The Kahila is many times on record to this effect. No matter where the Jews may come from, Russia, Poland, Syria, Arabia, or Morocco, they are to be let in, no matter who may be kept out. Note, as one pursues the study of Jewish rights, the quality of exemption seems to appear in most of them. Nowhere do the Jews proclaim their separateness as a people more than in their unceasing demands that they be treated differently than any other people, and given privileges that no other people would dream of asking. Two, the official recognition by city, state, and federal governments of the Jewish religion. The Kahila, in its reports, describes its efforts to obtain special recognition of Jewish holidays, in some cases going so far as to demand the continuance of pay to public employees who absent themselves at Yom Kippur, at the same time opposing the continuance of pay to Catholic public employees who desire to observe the chief Lenten days. This is a peculiarly inconsistent form of the demand for exemption, which has led to some interesting situations to be dealt with later. 3. The suppression of all references to Christ by city, state, and federal authorities in public documents or at public gatherings. Kahila records show that the Jews of Oklahoma addressed a petition to the convention which formulated the first state constitution, protesting that the acknowledgement of Christ in the instrument would be repugnant to the Constitution of the United States. The record also shows that a Jewish rabbi protested against a governor of Arkansas using a Christological expression in his Thanksgiving Day proclamation. 4. Official recognition of the Jewish Sabbath. The educational, cultural, business, and industrial life of the United States is regulated with reference to Sunday as the legal day of rest. For over 10 years, the Kahila has sought legislative recognition for Saturday. In the absence of official recognition, however, much public business is held up on account of jurors and others refusing to serve on Saturday. Jewish lawyers in the trial of cases are frequently ill on Saturdays. There is, of course, no objections to Jews recognizing their own Sabbath. This is their American privilege. But to make their Sabbath the Sabbath of all the people is another question. The Jews' chief objection to the observance of Sunday is that it is a Christological manifestation. 5. The right of the Jews in this country to keep open their stores, factories, and theaters, and to trade and work on the Christian Sunday. The Kahila, through the Jewish Sabbath Alliance, Rabbi Bernard Drachman, president, is promoting the observance of the Holy Sabbath in every possible way, through propaganda made to promote Sabbath sentiment and the distribution of circulars and pamphlets to the Yiddish populations of New York City. Sabbath sentiment is unobjectionable, but it becomes anti-Sunday sentiment. The Sunday laws of the city are, therefore, often broken. much agitation and ill feeling result. Kahila records are full of the disagreeable conditions which this demand promotes.
Yeah, there used to be laws. They had laws in a lot of places that you could not open your business on Sunday. It was a legal thing, and then it just went, I guess, slowly the laws were gone, but people did it anyway. And then they started deciding, we all had to go to the mall on Sunday. They started opening malls, and everybody wanted to go to the mall.
I think there still are those blue laws in some places in the United States. They definitely have them in Europe.
Oh, really?
6, elimination of Christmas celebrations in public schools and public places, police stations, and so on. Public displays of Christmas trees, singing of Christmas carols and Christmas hymns.
Christian hymns.
Oh, Christian hymns, excuse me. Kahila compelled the Council of University Settlement in New York City to adopt a resolution that in holiday celebrations held annually by the Kindergarten Association, Christmas trees, a Christmas program for celebration, and the singing of Christmas songs be eliminated.
Isn't that evil? That's so Scroogey.
Yeah, not nice for the little 5-year-old. Kahila records show that Jews petitioned the Chicago School Board demanding that sectarian teachings in public schools and the singing of Christmas hymns be discontinued.
Again, that was Christian.
Christian hymns. Okay. Also, that the demand of a Jewish rabbi, three public school principals were compelled to omit all Christmas celebrations and the use of the Christmas tree in public schools. 7, the removal from office or prosecution of all public persons who criticize the Jewish race, even where such action is in the public interest. Judge Otto A. Rosalski, member of the Kahila, announces that he will try to put through a bill for the prosecution of all persons who criticize the Jewish race. Kahila leaders at public meeting condemn City Magistrate Cornell for criticizing the East Side Yiddish community because of the increase in criminality of Jewish youth, and demand his impeachment. Leaders of New York Jewry succeed in having Police Commissioner Bingham removed from office by the mayor because of his criticism of criminality among Russian-Polish Jews of New York City. Remember what he said? He said most of the crime in New York City was by Jews.
Yeah, that came up in a previous chapter.
Twice.
And I was just amazed. I read somewhere else that soon after he said that and the Jews were all complaining, he suddenly disappeared. Yeah. I mean, he was out of office and nobody even said anything. I mean, he just kind of like disappeared and nobody complained about it. And he was the police commissioner. Wow.
8, the establishment of Bet Dins, or Jewish courts in public courthouses. The Kahila has succeeded in the establishment of a Bet Din in the Criminal Courts Building, New York, at which there presides the Reverend Dr. Aaron A. Yudelovich, Chief Rabbi of the United States. Kahila records show that prominent Jews of Jersey City, Paterson, Newark, Bayonne, and Hoboken have organized to establish Bet Dins in New Jersey.
Yeah, well, we had a whole thing. We talked about that in a previous program. Oh, it was quite a while back, and I found a picture of a Bet Din from New York City. And they still have them, you know? We talked about that. They still have some today. They have a few of them.
9, the right to eliminate from all schools and colleges all literature that is objected to by Jews. Kehila records show that Jews have prohibited the reading of The Merchant of Venice and Lamb's Tales from Shakespeare from schools throughout the country, including those in Galveston and El Paso, Texas, Cleveland, Ohio, and Youngstown, Ohio. At the present time, a cleaning of public library shelves is proceeding in a number of cities to prevent the public securing books which public money has bought. The objection to the books being that they discuss Jews as they are. All works in praise of Jews are spared. 10. Prohibition of the term Christian, or the use of the phrase state, religion, and nationality in any public advertisement as being an invasion of Jewish rights and a discrimination against Jews. Louis Marshall, as president of the American Jewish Committee, obtained apologies from Charles M. Schwab as director of the United States Shipping Board. Benjamin Strong, governor of the Federal Reserve Bank and head of the Liberty Loan Committee. Secretary McAdoo and Secretary of War Baker, because of the use of the term Christian in help wanted advertisements inserted in newspapers by their subordinates.
This Louis Marshall, let me just throw in here real quick. He was born to two Jewish immigrants who had just recently arrived from Germany. So he was just barely not an immigrant himself. He was recruited by Samuel Untermeyer. We know him, a classmate at Columbia, where he did his law degree, to join the law firm of Guggenheimer and Untermeyer in New York City. And he also worked with Louis Brandeis, another big Jew. And he was turned down, though, by President Taft for Supreme Court justice. That's what he really wanted to be. He really wanted to be a Supreme Court justice, but two different times there was an opening and he wasn't chosen. Good old President Taft. He was really a good guy.
And, for a while he was.
Yeah, and then he did all these, yeah, I won't go into him. But then they did all these things about, he was part of the team representing Leo Frank in Georgia, and he was a director for the NAACP. He does all that stuff. And in 1906, he, Jacob Schiff, and Cyrus Adler founded the American Jewish Committee. And that's enough.
Okay. The Jews succeeded in obtaining the withdrawal of the Junior Plattsburgh Manual used by students in officers' training camps because it contained the phrase, the ideal officer is a Christian gentleman, which the Jews construed to be an infringement of their rights. The Kehila, in its report for 1920, stated that several important New York newspapers, having been informed by it that the term Christian had appeared in the help-wanted advertisements of mercantile firms, the owners of the newspapers sent in their apologies and promised stricter censorship in the future. The Jews do not consider the use of the term Jews in help-wanted advertisements as a discrimination against non-Jews, and Jewish mercantile houses continue its use in their advertisements in the New York Times and other Jewish-owned dailies. These are Jewish rights, as they are indicated by Jewish demands. But they are by no means all. They are merely typical of the so-called rights and all the insistent demands. To go still further, the Kehila condemned the use of the term Americanization because of the implication that there is no distinction between Americanization and Christianization. Americanization is claimed by the Jews to be a mere cloak for proselytizing. Well, what it means is assimilation culturally is what it means.
Yeah.
The Kehila is behind demands on public funds for the support of Jewish educational, charitable, correctional, and other institutions. One important point about the great influx of Jewish immigration is that tens of thousands of these people come from lands where Jewish government has been established by order of the Peace Conference, and where public funds support Jewish activities. Their attitude toward America in this respect may therefore be accurately gauged. It is a common practice in New York for the Jews to force themselves into juries which try Jewish cases. Jewish law students, with which the city swarms, work their way through college, partly or wholly by jury duty. Another Jewish right is that the Associated Press shall print what the Jews want printed and in exactly the tone the Jews desire. This is perhaps one of the factors in the loss of luster on the part of the Associated Press of late years. The feeling that it is too much under the influence of certain groups, which are not non-Jewish groups. Newspapermen all sense this. AP men throughout the country sense it. But they express it in newspaper terms. They say, the Associated Press gives a New York coloring to everything. But the ingredients of the New York coloring are 85% Jewish. From a survey of the demands, these appear to be some of the Jewish rights which Kahila and the American Jewish Committee are organized to secure. And how far they say they have succeeded, we shall next see.
Well, there we go. We finished one.
Yeah.
We finished it at the end of the show. Well, that was very good. You know, it's just very interesting to see how they got started with this right in the beginning, and they never stopped pushing all these things they want for themselves. Never stop pushing it, and it takes away from other people, especially takes away from us. I was real interested in this last paragraph about the Associated Press, what he said about it. Obviously, already at that time, they were not, you know, they were, colluding with the Jews too much and not being a good news source as they should be. And, you know, it was the Associated Press that this woman, who claimed that she saw Elie Wiesel's tattoo when she interviewed him, wrote in her Associated Press article about the interview. And I started writing about that, and I was doing a bunch of calling and so on, and some other people were too. Couldn't get anywhere, but she never would respond at all, and they didn't make her respond either. And so, you know, for her to say in this article that, I was there, and Ellie pulled up his sleeve and showed me his tattoo. He said, I don't usually show it. And no witnesses, no nothing. You know, whose idea was that anyway? And she's a real pro-Jew. Well, she probably is Jewish, and she writes it with this other Jewish guy, a lot of pro-Jewish stuff and Holocaust stuff and stuff. So I don't know if it was her idea all by herself or if they worked it out together, but I couldn't get any response. That's the Associated Press.
Yeah, well, we need a photograph of that tattoo, don't we?
Well, yeah, well, people have been asking for it for years. And if he can't give it yet, that means he doesn't have one.
Yeah, it's a boat anchor or a heart that says mom on it or something.
That would be funny, wouldn't it? But, you know, they're just this collusion. Well, we're at the end of the show, and ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us tonight, those of you who are listening in when we do it, and we'll see you next week. Thanks, Hattie.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. The International Jew Study Hour will return next week, exclusively on the White Network.